Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who know that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you want to join us, is 877-300-7645. Dateline is Baghdad. What a mess we have woven. Iraq's Kurdish region has begun to sell oil independently of the central government, a move that this journalist says is exacerbating the divisions in a country as it struggles to turn back the Islamic State. It was so obvious. You'd have to be either completely ignorant, stupid as a matter of fact, or irrational, incapable of examining evidence and rendering a rational conclusion. To not anticipate that America's invasion of Iraq would create this very scenario. The country is divided between fundamentalist Shia Muslims, all of whom are loyal to the seat of Shia Islam, that would be Iran, and the mullahs there, particularly the Ayatollah Khomeini. And they represent about 60% of the population. About 30% is comprised of Sunni Muslims who think that Shia Muslims are apostates worthy of death. And those Sunni Muslims, of course, were in power when America invaded. And while they were not kind to the Shia, particularly since Iran's Shia had engaged in a long and bloody war with Iraq, they weren't systematically terrorizing them, nor using the Iraqi army to wipe them out. And then, of course, about 5% of the population was comprised of Kurds. They survived under Saddam Hussein reasonably well until the Kurds decided that, you know, desperate for a homeland they could call their own, that they would join Iran in the fight against Iraq. And when they took up arms against Iraq, well, inside of Iraq, on behalf of the Iranians, when conventional weapons were ineffective against them, Saddam Hussein gassed them. And they truly brought it upon themselves in that case. They turned traitor on their own country. Now, it was obvious in looking at the way the Kurds had engaged against Saddam Hussein, the way the Kurds had engaged against the Ayatollahs in Iran. They lived in a protected enclave while the Shah was in power, but that gave way when the Ayatollah arrived, because the Kurds are Sunni, not Shia Muslims. And it is obvious when you look at the relationship between the Kurds and Turkish government, most Kurds live in eastern Turkey, that there was no chance that they would reconcile with the rest of a united government, or that there was one chance in a billion that the Sunnis and Shias would share power in Iraq, much less share power not only together, but with the Kurds. There was 0% possibility that was going to occur. And yet, the nincompoop we had as president, George W. Bush, and his cadre of morons invaded Iraq with the express purpose of taking out Saddam Hussein based upon a pile of lies, not his, but ours, and broke the country, splintered it into pieces with the intent of gluing it all back together. Well, what we're reading now is that, and finding now is exactly what I predicted. The Kurds say, no, we're not going to even pretend to be part of the Iraqi government. And so the original deal was that the Kurds could have their own autonomous region, but they would give 500,000 barrels a day of oil to the Iraqi government, which in turn the Iraqi government would turn and give them some 30 to 40% of its federal revenue. It was a way of pretending like the new Kurdistan was still part of Iraq. Only one problem. The Kurds initially gave the Iraqis less than what they had promised. And the Iraqis gave the Kurds far less a percentage of the federal budget. And so when they finally cajoled the Kurds into giving them more, and they did, and they brought it up to the standard, the Iraqi government didn't honor their side of the bargain and cheated them. So at this point, the Kurds aren't giving the Iraqi government any of the oil and are simply selling it out through pipelines through Turkey. There's no hope of reconciliation. We broke this country, and it is splintered as a result. This particular article says that this move is exacerbating divisions in the country as it struggles to turn back the Islamic State. It's interesting that the Kurds have been America's principal ally against the Islamic State. Now, that's a problem because of the fact that we want to engage Turkey as an ally against the Islamic State. In fact, we just flew a squadron of F-15s to Turkey to bomb the Islamic State, but all of the targets are provided by the Kurds. And yet, at the same time, Turkey is bombing the Kurds. At the same time, America is coordinating its bombing runs against the Islamic State using coordinates sent to us by the Kurds. I mean, talk about a mess that we have created here. And, of course, the only reason the Islamic State exists is because we invaded Iraq. And we gave a military to the Iranians so that they could control Iraq so that they're, you know, today, you don't have a government without a military. A military now is essential to government, which tells you that governments are repressive, that nobody wants to be part of a government, and that governments have to impose their will against their people, not with domestic police anymore, that we use the term military armies to describe domestic police forces, to impose their will against the people. And here in Iraq, the Shia turned out to be just windbags. And all the weapons we gave them got turned over to the Islamic State because the Shia were, when given the opportunity, used American weapons to annihilate the Sunnis, all because of what America had done. And the Sunnis finally aggregated together, formed the Islamic State, and successfully stop them. And the only force that has been the least bit effective against the rise of the Islamic State has been the Kurds. But nobody wants to partner with the Kurds, except evidently America, which views the PPK as a terrorist organization, but says, oh, these Kurds that we're dealing with, they're not part of that terrorist organization, even though the only portraits that they have in their meeting halls are of the founder, the PPK. This oil deal, which stipulates that the Kurdish regional government must transfer 550 barrels a day to get, and I gave you a wrong number, I exaggerated, I apologize, 17% of the national budget, includes the 300 barrels a day from fields in Kirkuk, which was where Saddam Hussein had hailed, and that the government has been unable to export petroleum because of security situations throughout the country. So Iraq is destitute. I mean, there is no economy in the Muslim world apart from oil. And so Iraq is destitute. It's dependent upon this crude from the one place that isn't rife with terrorism, because the rest of Iraq, the crude is either controlled by Iran, that still has some sanction issues, or it's controlled by the Islamic State, which is selling it to finance their reign of terror. And so the Kurds are the only ones that can sell oil, and that's going out through Turkey. Talk about hypocritical. The Turks are making a bundle of money on the oil that is being shipped through their pipelines to finance an enemy that they are also bombing. is just such a mess. This is also Dateline Syria. This is describing this incredible disaster that America has woven in this region. It talks about Kurdish fighters and using Samsung tablets denoting Google Earth maps marked with positions where the Islamic State is allegedly shooting at his troops. And then he's using Google Earth on the Samsung tablet also to communicate where his Embrace Death Kurdish jihadists are hanging out. And in this particular scenario, witnessed by Western reporters, he highlighted in red the coordinates of a building which was adjacent to a mosque that the Islamic fighters had, state fighters had taken over. So they gave the GPS coordinates of all of this to the Americans. And guess what the Americans did? They went and bombed the mosque. All at in support of the Kurds. All at the same time, the Turkish government was bombing these same Kurds. And in some warped way, we call this diplomacy. In some warped way, this is a coalition. Oh, Glenn, what do you think about the mess that we have woven?
Well, it seems to me like, at least for the moment, the loose cannon on deck is Erdogan. And so if they, they could get, I'm not sure how much Turkey has changed a lot in recent years. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Israel had rented air bases in Turkey.
Right.
And Incirlik was the primary U.S., and there was a lot more Western influence there with the government. But now with Erdogan wanting to be the great caliph of that region,
yes.
It would be really good to get him to stand down a bit.
Yeah, it's really interesting that Erdogan was positioning himself as the new Nasser, as the lion of the Islamic world, as the new caliph of Islam, when the Islamic State came in and took his prized toy away from him. And he's really in quite a fix today. It is also interesting, Glenn, that Erdogan was a fundamentalist Muslim. And he capitalized, being ever the politician, on what was called the Arab Spring, which was really an Islamic reformation. And that the roots of that reformation were sweeping Turkey long before it rose its ugly head in throughout the northern Africa. And the reality is that he has ridden that wave where now it's something in the range of 70% of Turks are fundamentalists. And we've experienced in Turkey an Islamic reformation. And I think Turkey is as fundamentalist a theocracy right now as any time in its history, including the Ottoman Empire. What are your thoughts?
Right. Well, that's actually sort of affecting Turkey's status with NATO because, this is it's less Western in its cultural sensibilities as a result of all this, and
correct.
Therefore less of a natural ally with NATO.
Correct.
And so, like I said, we've seen the Israelis give, are persona non grata there now. They no longer have their air bases there.
Right.
Our presence at Incirlik isn't as influential as it once was, though we still have access to it. And it just, if I had to guess, I'm thinking over long term, looking at this stuff with the Kurds being Sunnis, if the Shiites are ultimately vanquished, from Syria and Iran, and the Shiite influence over Iraq is overthrown, and the Sunnis do take over, the Kurds would probably hammer out some sort of agreement with the Kurds that would work, relative to the oil and the money and all that sort of thing. But when you have
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, then, as tough as the Kurds may be in their different groups, you know, then they too would probably, you know, if, like, once the Sunnis, if the Sunnis overthrow Assad in Syria and Iran, then they would turn, and then they would turn on the Kurds, and then would have your global Sunni caliphate.
Correct. Correct.
You know.
Yeah. It's and really, what's interesting here is Erdogan's in kind of an uneasy position, because he's put the country such that it's a one-party system, and the one party is a religious party, the Islamic party, and he's the principal portal for jihadists worldwide to join the Islamic State. And he has done nothing to try to eradicate the Islamic State, because he can't oppose fundamentalist Sunni Islam. And so he's in a real pickle, because what happens when fundamentalist Muslims, which are now the majority in Turkey, recognize that the leaders and the mission of the Islamic State are much more Islamic than the mission and leaders of Turkey?
Right. Well, it's been my contention all along that those who have, you know, been using the Islamic State, those who, you know, encouraged its growth and unleashed it like a pack of wild dogs, you know, thinking, they think they can get control of this Frankenstein monster of theirs, you know, or maybe they're planning on trying to eliminate it or something like that in the long run, but they're using this Islamic State as an engine of chaos in the region, thinking, I think, that they're going to be able to control it in the long run. You know,
I don't know what America. I mean, it's hard to imagine that there's any rational thinking with America, for example, just flying the squadron of F-16s to Turkey. That they only have one source of intelligence now. America has in Syria to attack the Islamic State, and that's the Kurds.
Right.
And the
right.
100% of America's the only effective use of American weapons in Syria has been the weapons that America has given to the Kurds. And so,
right.
But those weapons are a threat to Turkey, and America using the Kurds as allies and bombing the Islamic State is a threat to Turkey. And with Turkey bombing America's allies while America has warplanes and squadrons of pilots in Turkey, man, tell me that isn't a recipe for disaster.
Oh, it certainly is. And also, America's, you know, been so duplicitous, you know, that while claiming that they were going to, you know, do airstrikes against ISIS, they've bombed infrastructure targets in Syria and that sort of thing. So nobody's bombing the right people or who they say they're going to oppose.
Yeah,
it's all lies.
Just think, if Assad and his government were toppled by al-Nusra, by the Islamic State, by America's interference, how would Syria differ than from Libya today?
Iraq.
Or Iraq?
Yeah, exactly. It would be a nightmare. Yeah, absolutely.
This article says that Turkey has resisted calls to do more to support the fight against the Islamic State, mindful that it might further Kurdish ambitions to eventually carve out an independent state. That isn't the reason. That absolutely, I mean, it's just brain dead. No, the reason that Turkey hasn't done more to fight the Islamic State is that Turkey is Sunni Muslim. The Islamic State is Sunni Muslim. The Islamic State's prime enemy is the Assad government, which is Shia. There has been a gargantuan increase in influence along Turkey's southern border in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon of Shia Islam, because America gave Iran's only natural enemy, Iraq, to it. And it expanded its influence throughout the region. So the Islamic State is fighting Turkey's principal foe, Shia Islam. And so there's no way that the reason they haven't been opposed to them is that, combined with, it'd be a death sentence for Erdogan.
Well, and this is why those who are less antithetical to the West, the Sunnis who are less anti-West, or who conduct more trade with the U.S. or want more relations with the West, You know, they're using IS, I think, at this point to be their radical, you know, mercenary force, and thinking that they can bring something of some sort of moderation later.
Right.
But I mean, if ISIS were to take over and actually rule the roosts of these nations, you would have a caliphate that was extremely militant and extremely anti-West.
Yeah.
And that's not ultimately what Erdogan wants. That's not ultimately what the Saudis and the Qataris and the United Arab Emirates want.
No.
You know, so they're going to, they want this, they want their little mercenary force to do all this damage and then be throttled back a bit. But whether or not they would be able to throttle them back remains to be seen.
Well, it reminds me of a story that took place in the 1970s when a numbskull president who had no moral character, Jimmy Carter, and Zygmunt Brzezinski, along with Gates, who was at the CIA at the time, now he's heading the Boy Scouts, they decided that they could use a jihadist force, the Taliban, to go fight a proxy war against their avowed enemy, the Soviet Union. And they armed them and empowered them and sent them on their way as a proxy force that they thought they could use to fight their foe and then later get them under control. Well, that turned out to be Al-Qaeda and the Taliban that took control of Afghanistan that we're now fighting in Afghanistan. That's how well creating these monsters works.
Well, right, and they have monsters created by monsters. Like when you have a guy like Brzezinski, who was, you know, mentoring Pol Pot and affirming his extermination of his own middle class in Cambodia, what do you think these guys are willing to stoop to, you know?
Oh, there's no level. There's no level of evil that is beneath them.
No. Yeah, I mean,
that's
crazy.
Why when people say, you know, you ought to respect the office of the president and you ought to show patriotism in your country. No, the stuff that we've done is just reprehensible.
Have you seen Brzezinski on TV at all in the past year or so? His eyes are, his eye sockets, his eyes are turning red like Emperor Palpatine in the Star Wars. I mean, it's like, oh, this guy looks like he's turning into the Dark Lord or something, you know?
Yeah, but it's too bad that those that have him on television don't at the same time juxtapose him speaking of how Allah will be with the Taliban when the Taliban strike using American weapons against the Russians.
Right, exactly. So, you know, they could have, but, you know, we know one thing, those of us, those paying attention to the prophets, okay, what Yahweh has said through the prophets, we know one thing. We know that there is going to be some sort of unification that occurs in the Islamic world, and that Turkey and Iran at some point are going to come down together against Israel.
Yeah, and what I sense is that you are right that ultimately Sunni Islam will prevail against Shia Islam. And when we say that, what that means is well over 100 million people are going to die as a result of that fight. The only place I disagreed is I don't think that when Sunni Muslims ultimately gain control that they will play nice with the Kurds. They won't. They'll continue to be who they are, which is untrustworthy and disgusting, reprehensible. And so the Kurds, and this article, by the way, actually affirms what I've said for a long time. It says the Kurds, who roughly 30 million and are spread out over Turkey, Iraq, and Syria, have been described, guess by whom, as the world's largest ethnic group without a homeland.
Right, Kurds, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it completely mutes any argument that can be wielded in favor of a mythical people known as the Palestinians. The Palestinians are not an ethnic group. They aren't a nationalistic group. They aren't even a group, and therefore their number is always fictitious. The Kurds are a genuine ethnic group, and they are repressed by Muslims, and yet the world doesn't seem to care.
Well, they're not, right, well, they won't be exterminated, but it's ultimately, at some point when it's all the turns spirals, there'll be some sort of compromise or they'll be brought to heel somehow that they fit in with the Sunni, you know, majority or something. But it's funny, Israel talks a good game about existential threats when they're often not really facing them, but when all this transpires and they actually are facing this is where I see Israel coming into like a great repentance and kind of going back to God. As reprobate as it may be, God's going to honor his commitment, and they're going to have to cry out to him and do some repenting, and then, we'll see right. God's intervention on their behalf. But for the moment, with all their yes. abortion rate and their pornography and their LGBT, resorts on the sea and all that sort of thing, it's a country that needs to do a little turning back to Yahweh. And when this time, although Netanyahu has been squawking about Iran having a bomb within months since the 80s, when this threat actually does coalesce and appear, I think that's when we're going to see some turning back to Yahweh by Israel.
Yeah, I think that the threat to Israel by an Iranian bomb is infinitely less concerning than the threat
right,
to Israel by right. its own internal malaise and debauchery.
Yeah. But they will turn and cry out, and God will hear from heaven, and when his people are called by his name, humble themselves and repent and cry out, and Yahweh will hear, and then we're going to see Old Testament miracle stuff, as people say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this was talking about the problem that is brewing in Turkey, where America is arming and bombing on behalf of Turkey's principal foe, which is the Kurds, while providing weapons to Turkey and allowing Turkey to use American warplanes to bomb those very same Kurds. And the United States has taken great pains, the article said, to note that it is not working with the same group that is outlawed, the PKK, but instead by another group that goes by an acronym YPG. But
right.
guess what? Frame portraits of Abdullah Öcalan, the founder of the PKK and champion of Kurdish autonomy, are the only portraits that can be seen hanging in the offices and headquarters of the YPG militia. Fighters wear pins bearing his image. And the Islamic State fighters who are captured on the battlefield end up on gurneys in hospitals adorned with wall-sized portraits of Abdullah Öcalan, who, by the way, has been in prison since 1999 in Turkey. So one person said it's nonsensical to say that you are on one hand calling the PKK a terrorist group, and yet you're using them and arming them in Syria to fight an Islamic terrorist group.
Yeah, the duplicity is the order of the day, and there are several numerous different three-letter acronym, Kurd groups.
Oh, yeah. The primary group is called Embrace Death. You know, the ones right. that are wearing the desert colored camouflage are the PKK in drag under the acronym, the People's Protection Group, the YPG. But the ones that are in black jihadist outfits, those are, the Embrace Death, jihadists. And it's a mess. And you know what's interesting, of course, that the Kurds have no interest whatsoever with defeating the Islamic State. They're never going to go beyond the boundaries of their own towns
right,
and
they wanna,
region.
Right.
That's all they're
carving out their piece of the pot.
That's it. That is it. And that's it. And they're never going beyond that. And this last weekend, Al-Nusra Front just announced that as a result of America repositioning warplanes in Turkey, and of Turkey bombing both the Kurds and the Islamic State, that they were going to withdraw from any positions that they held in opposition to the Islamic State and simply give those territories to the Islamic State. That didn't work out so well for us, did it?
No.
And also they announced that while they were repositioning, they came across groups of these moderate jihadists that America has trained. Well, they took their weapons and said, if you guys don't cease and desist, everyone in this country will hunt you down and kill you. So go away. Yeah, they didn't engage them in battle. They just simply took their guns and said, come on, go away. Who are you kidding?
And America's been so duplicitous and so manipulative and so, like, wicked. I mean, how can things possibly end well for America, given its ridiculous, you know, manipulation and duplicity and all of this stuff?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Nobody
is going to, you know, like Napoleon called Britain Perfide Albion. You know, they're going to be calling America Perfide Americana, you know, Perfide America, because perfidious manipulation is just, you know, our State Department was so disingenuous and so manipulative and so duplicitous, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're like the abominator saying we're not at war with Islam. Well, after the Kurds gave the coordinates for the Islamic States to bomb the mosque, New York Times journalists went to the scene of the blast, only to see tiny portions of the mosque still standing, its dome completely missing. And in an 8-foot crater caused by the American bombs in the midst of the mosque, they found Islamic State fighters all around in this crater, many of within reach of rocket-propelled grenade launchers. Bullet casings littered the ground like confetti. What a story out of Pakistan. The news came out yesterday that 7 people were arrested in eastern Pakistan on suspicion of involvement in a child sexual abuse and extortion scandal. So this is not just pedophilia. It's not just homosexual pedophilia being perpetrated within Islam, but also an extortion scandal. Extorting the parents to be able to buy their child back to keep the ongoing assault from continuing. And in the midst of this, they're not only blackmailing the parents, but they're filming their abuse of these children. And the size of the problem is so large that the prime minister of the province, Sharif, has had to order a review into just how massive this problem is. Local media say that gang-made videos, these would be Islamic videos, showing the abuse of children whose parents were then subjected to blackmail. The scandal centers on the city of Kasur. Correspondents say the victims are afraid to report the abuse, in which the abusers brag about their exploits. Because in Islam, and this journalist, of course, doesn't know that, in Islam, the victim of rape is the one who is punished for the rape, not the perpetrator. Child sex abusers are widespread throughout Pakistan. According to one estimate, over 3,500 children were molested and filmed in the process of being molested. Meanwhile, many have noticed that most of the clips being investigated date all the way back to 2009 and continued throughout the years, with almost no cases being reported. No indictments. And yet there are thousands of these videos. This has led to some to suspect that the clips were reported to the police amid a local dispute. And that the police, of course, were part of the problem. One boy told the BBC that the abuse began when he was 11. And this is now, you know, the Muslims attack the West as being immoral because of homosexuality. Well, these are Muslims perpetrating homosexual pedophilia. They sexually abused me in front of cameras. They came back a week later and showed me the video and said that if I did not do what they wanted, they would show it to my friends and school colleagues. Another woman told the BBC that her son had been molested and blackmailed for 5 years, and that she only recently learned about the abuse. Media reports suggest that hundreds of the videos have been made involving more than 280 children just within the last few months. We have around 30 clips of one incident showing six victims and seven people involved. We have arrested those seven, and we're still trying to recover more videos. This said there was no political motive behind the investigations. No, there's a religious motive.
Right.
An economic motive. Wow.
Pakistan, Americans are especially uninformed about Pakistan. It's an enigma to Americans, right, about which they tend to think of it as a somewhat Western-friendly nation. It's a nuclear nation.
Right.
It's, you know, considered one of the less, you know, anti-Western Islamic nations. But they don't understand, you know, they don't understand the inherent tensions between Pakistan, India, especially the Kashmir region, and that they've received a rattled and threatened war, nuclear war, in the past couple decades a few times. And so Pakistan, you know, since it's not immediately, you know, as directly involved with all these IS, you know, problems and that sort of thing, people don't understand, you know, the significance of Pakistan and all this. And, you know, if the Pakistani government had any sense of morality or anything, I personally would think that since you have video evidence, I would think that a purge was in order and that these vermin should be exterminated with extreme prejudice by the government itself.
No, because Pakistan is 98% Islamic, and in Islamic, those who would be punished are the victims of the sexual molestation, not the perpetrators. And the issues with Pakistan is that Pakistan is the source of the Taliban. Pakistan had great relationships with Al-Qaeda. They're not America's ally. They're America's enemy.